Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with your hosts, Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And, of course, you can always access this podcast and previous podcasts at KXORadio.com.
Wait, we only played 12 seconds of intro. Do you know how expensive it is to get the band in here every single week to do that? You know, the conga player actually flies in from Mozambique. And behavioral health really fronts up that money to get to get those people in. No, I'm just kidding. Good morning. I'm Scott. She's Maria. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness here in the Imperial Valley. 337-8874 is the phone number. Podcast is always available. Thanks to Mario Espinosa's diligent...
Is your second life, like, trying to be a comedian?
No, I'm like, you know... Why, that wasn't not much intro time.
And I was like, hey, you know, get it going. We have two guests here, and, you know, they have good information, especially for a community agency that can benefit. At one point or another, can be of assistance.
Hopefully. Center for Family Solutions is in the house today. Yeah. We're going to talk about all things related to family interaction. I suspect we don't even have to dwell on the dark side, although that may come up. Maybe we can dwell on what kind of strengths and what kind of stuff, you know, helps families fly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're here today with D'Angelo Singh, who's the program coordinator for Center for Family Solutions, and Eric Apollinar. I want to put the accent in a different syllable. And he's the director for the counseling for Center for Family Solutions. Good morning, gentlemen. The mic is right in between you. Let's start with you, Eric. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Where do we want to go? Hey, good morning, D'Angelo. Okay, so you guys got the voices now, so we won't have to, like, tell you who's who each time. And the mic's back in the middle, which is the dreaded middle spot. So, Center for Family Solutions. Who knows the history? How long have you guys been around? Let's start there. Toss up.
All right. Well, Center for Family Solutions started as Woman Haven. It's actually a domestic violence shelter, and we do anything that's related with that. We started back in 1977. It's over 30 years, and it started as a small little initiative from people in Hopeville, actually. And it was a small little shelter next to the community center in Hopeville, and it started, well, pretty much with the whole movement in the United States back in the 70s after civil rights movement. A lot of people started noticing that domestic violence was something that we shouldn't allow as a nation, as, you know, as human beings. And the shelter started to come to be with women taking care of other women, let's say women that were well socially, economically, will take in women that weren't that well. And that's how the whole shelter movement started. And then it became something more real with the Violence Against Women Act, which actually is the law that funds all the domestic violence shelters in California and all the United States. So we've been around for more than 30 years, and our mission remains, you know, helping these people that are going through these issues.
So, Eric, this isn't some government program that came down from Washington or Sacramento or some other place with big white buildings. This is something that actually grew up in our community by people who were concerned in our community a while ago and has survived all the economic ups and downs and everything else.
That's being hit by the budget cuts like most people have. But it's a community-based organization, and actually we survived through grant funding. So it's, you know, every year it's trying to fish out the money so we can provide the services for the community. And yeah, it's more than anything else. We have people on our board, on our staff, that are, you know, people from Imperial County that are very, very aware and also compromised with this issue.
Nice, nice. Now, where are you guys located, and I guess what kind of services? Let's start there, and then we'll maybe talk about some of the reasons why those services are needed. D'Angelo, where are you guys at, man?
Yes, our services, because we provide services, you know, shelter services, also provide other type of departments, legal department, you know, dealing with restraining orders, dealing
with... Okay, well, let's start shelters. Let's break it down. Shelter. Give me shelter. Who gets sheltered?
Is it...
Why do they get sheltered?
Well, especially for domestic violence. I mean, a lot of times domestic violence happens at any time. So are you opened? Right. Is it open 24/7?
Well, we have a hotline number, of course, they can call. And, you know, they call that number and they go through an interview and we set them up, you know. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, there's that and, I mean, being the sheriff involved and, you know, but the shelter service is open 24 hours, I mean, for as far as, like, you know, it being an emergency. Shelter services are for the domestic violence victims. They're victimized by domestic violence. But as well, you know, we have some that come in that are not domestic violence victims, but also homeless women and children that come in. So
only women? Is that, let's start
yes,
there.
Yes, only women. Only women and children that we have in our...
If I don't have, if I'm a woman and I don't have any children...
If you're a woman and don't have children, of course, there's also the exception that they do go through with our staff interview and see what, you know, of course, if there's also room, I mean, we're pretty much always sometimes full, you know. We have a lot of, I mean, of course, you know, the domestic violence is a big problem in our valley. You know,
yeah. Is it?
It's a, I mean, it is. I mean, really? It's, yes, I mean, well, you know, a lot of people don't talk about it because it's something that people don't want to talk about. You know, it's the family secrets, what it's called, you know, keeping it, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Kids are not supposed to talk about it. You know, people, you know, we've had some incidents here recently. I mean, not too long ago, you know, with, you know, that have happened, you know, with a teacher and other people, you know, that's happened to them as well with domestic violence, you know.
So sometimes it flares up in some fairly dangerous ways. But right. You're saying there's, like, lots of lower-level stuff floating around there that nobody knows about or talks about?
What do you mean lower stuff?
Well, like, occasionally, obviously, something newsworthy comes up or something that, you know, police get involved and there's quote unquote big,
well yeah of
big
course
drama.
There's some that you don't hear about. I mean, you have the everyday you know, people phone calls, you know, they call in and there's you know, maybe there's neighbors fighting, you know. Sometimes people are afraid to get involved because, you know, they don't want to get involved in, you know, there's a couple fighting, you know, and there's yelling,
but
screaming.
You know,
I
what
mean,
especially when there's, like, in this case, you know, a child was involved too,
right?
You know, it's again, you know, it takes everybody to raise a child. You know, so if you know that, you know, the next door neighbors are always screaming and yelling and there's children involved, what's going to happen to those children when they grow
up? It's a very underreported crime, actually. Even women that live,
you know,
under...
We don't want to be said, oh, you're a nosy neighbor, or, you know, it's none
so
of your business.
So help me, when am I breaking the law? I mean, when is my anger? Because I have a right to be angry, right? I mean, I live in an angry world.
Yeah, definitely.
I get angry many times.
It's an angry
when,
world.
And I've also been told by really knowledgeable folks that if I repress my anger, bad things gonna happen.
Yeah, you'll get hemorrhoids.
Ow!
I'm sorry. The whole idea behind this is that domestic violence, first of all, we have to understand it's a crime. In the state of California and most states in the United States,
so
across the nation.
When is it a crime? I mean, if I come home after a bad day at work and I'm in a bad mood and something happens to trigger my attention, you know, I don't know, somebody does something and I start yelling at them.
Well, go outside and play some shoots.
Am I breaking the law? That's the question.
And there's an understanding here that well-being has been affected by of the other person.
Yes.
And it's been affected because you are incapable of dealing with your own emotions. Let's say you're in a bad mood. Why other people should pay for that? It's your mood. Why do you give it to others? Keep it to yourself. That's kind of like the issue that we're talking about. Regular disputes, you know, couples have always disagreements. That happens. We're talking about something that goes beyond that, something that has to do with power and control, something that has to do with breaking this respect and this relationship of mutual caring that you can have with another person. It's a crime as soon as it's reported and as soon as you have grounds to report it.
So it could be raising your voice?
If it's something that has been happening for quite some time and it has become frightening, it has become emotionally detrimental for the other person. Of course.
So we're talking about the neighbor is tired of me raising my voice. No, you need a microphone. You can't just.
The neighbors can get really tired of it, and they should call the police. And I don't know if nothing is going to happen. We're talking about violence.
I'm just interested in the statute and where the crime is.
Well, basically. I mean, again, if there's, they know, the neighbors know that there's children involved in there. Maybe they don't see it, but they hear it. It affects the children.
Yeah, right? The neighbors can call, but we're talking about something that happens between an intimate relationship. Mm-hmm. The neighbors might be upset because you scream a lot, but that's their thing. And they have to deal with it in their proper instances. We're talking about something that happens between an intimate relationship, between somebody that you live with or somebody that you used to live with, somebody you had a relationship with, somebody that's related to you by blood, somebody that's related to you in other ways. So we're not just talking about neighbors that are listening to loud voices next door. We're talking about something that happens within the household.
So should we draw the line at physicality then? Should we say it's touching another person in an unkind or power-controlling type of way that's not consensual
Again, it's not just physical. It's also emotional. It's also verbal. It happens in many different ways. Like the example you were using about raising your voice, if it's something that keeps happening, it's becoming detrimental to the emotional well-being of the other person. That's emotional violence. So violence happens in different ways. It's different types of violence. It's physical, it's emotional, it's verbal, it's sexual, social, economical. There's many different ways. Domestic violence, it's so prevalent, it's so out there that we have to have a lot of regulations on it. So it's not just that, you know, not allowing somebody to leave a room, for example, can be considered domestic violence. Taking the phone away from somebody can be considered violence. There's many things that can be considered violence, and we have to understand it happens between an intimate relationship, a close relationship, blood-related relationship or something like that, and it has to do with detrimental of the other person's emotional well-being, whether it is through the means of use of physical violence or through the means of use of terroristic tactics or other things. It's pretty hard to grasp when we haven't really seen it, but in reality, even the things that we say, even if we don't say it out loud, even if we don't scream, can cause a lot of emotional damage.
Ooh, so you could say something mean, and that would be just as abusive or maybe more so than yelling.
There's a lot of emotional scarring that happens with what is said between a relationship. We're talking about two people that decided to be together. We're talking about two people that decided to be a couple, that they say they love each other, that they care for each other. They have this thing going on with them. That's why they decided to be together. And one of them becomes abusive, or both of them. It becomes very...
Or becomes. They may already be abusive. There's no rule that says you can't marry somebody that's already abusive.
And we have to make sure that domestic violence just doesn't happen against women. It also happens against men.
It's also out there. You know, there's different types of violence. It's mutual violence, something that happens between the two of them.
They may even consider that love. Whoa.
Love, that's what it said, a love-hate relationship.
There's a lot of different cultural ideas.
If I didn't love you, I wouldn't be yelling at you or taking the phone away or, you know, whatever it is, right?
There's a lot of cultural ideas that are related to it that go kind of like hand-in-hand with that idea.
Well, don't you want to honor culture, though? Why, you know, at what line does culture become like, no, you have to get rid of your culture, man, because your culture is, like, not cool?
Yeah, standing on a black or white line like that, it's sort of not really the best thing to do. We have to understand that everything has to be taken into account, and it's not getting rid of your culture, it's understanding how to defy it with your own behavior. In this case, you know, I don't consider women to be my servants, for example, and that's very cultural because I'm Hispanic, right? I don't consider women to be cooking for me or doing laundry for me. I'm defying my culture, although I feel very, very proud of being Hispanic, of being Mexican. It's not about letting your culture go. It's about understanding how it affects the way you relate to others and defying it. You know, we're thinking human beings. We are capable of doing things. We're capable of making our own decisions, our choices. And that's where the line gets drawn. You decide to do the things you do with the people you live with. It's not something that's imposed on you. It's not something that you can't help. You are your own person. You decide. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to say here. It's not that we're trying to say that it's culture fault, or is it social fault, or is the relationship's fault? It's just the fact that people make wrong decisions. So helping them make better decisions is our job.
Seems like it's a difficult job, considering the impacts of society, considering the impacts of culture. 337-8874 is the phone number. Let's talk about it. It's the show. We're here with Scott and Maria, and we're here with Eric Apollinar, who's the director of counseling, and D'Angelo Singh, who's the program coordinator. So people come to your program after some sort of problem related to domestic violence has emerged out of their lives.
Or being homeless, too.
Yes. So how many right. people come because somebody made them come? You need help. Versus how many people walk in on their own? What's your experience, D'Angelo?
For me, I think it's pretty much, well, my experience is pretty much almost the same. I mean, it's more, you know, old person coming in because there's a problem, but you know, there's a fear also of trying to come in and get help. There's people out there always trying to help others, like, you know, you need to go get help, you need to go, and it's not that easy, because you're talking about a person that has to leave somebody they love, or leave somebody that they had a history with. It's the father of my children. You know, I
don't believe I can get anything better, because
right,
society and the world have told me in some pretty not so subtle ways
right.
that this is my lot in life.
Well, you know, and then you have the, you know, economic situation
mm-hmm.
where, you know, if I leave,
where
you know, my
do?
Husband takes care of me.
He's a sole provider.
Yeah, he's a sole provider. Or he threats and says, you know what, if you leave, I'm not going to help you. That's where it becomes economic abuse, where, you know, they're in control of the money. There's, you know what, I'm taking your credit cards away from me. I'm doing all this. So the woman's forced to start. But I've seen women in our agency that, I mean, they turn around. I mean, they have to start all over again, and it's amazing to see the choice they make and say, you know what, I'm not going to go through this no more, whatever it takes. And they struggle, but they go back to school. I mean, it's just amazing what you see the turnaround on some of these women, you know, just making that choice for their children.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that because I come from that. I come from that type of life. I come from that life growing up in a violent home, growing up in a domestic violent home. Center for Family Solutions is not only a place that I work. 22 years ago, I have a history with Center for Family Solutions. I was that kid that came in with my mother with six kids, sat down, and waited for my mother to get restraining orders against my father because my father was abusive. I grew up. I was born into a domestic violence home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mother was already being abused when I was in her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing new to me. So I know, I've seen this woman struggle in her life. I've seen what it does to a person. And that's kind of where it talks about my personal story. You know, that's why I have this connection
mm-hmm.
with Center for Family Solutions.
You have a history.
I do. I do have a history. I go way back. You know, my mother was murdered when I was 14 because of domestic violence. She left six children behind. And it was going through the whole domestic violence life of 14 years of going through it. You're talking about kidnapping, you know, sleeping in the streets. I mean, going from everything that we had to go through as kids, moving around school to school. And that's a typical thing that happens in domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Which I spoke earlier about the family secret, keeping it hush hush.
Yeah.
Because
I don't,
you know, and that's how I did. I had to do that in school. I couldn't say anything. But I was
mm-hmm.
afraid. I don't know if I got home and my mom was alive. That's all I thought about, was my mom alive when I would get home.
Hard mm-hmm. to study spelling when it's like that, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't focus, you know. And that's what domestic affects children. So I'm that story that, you know, comes from that. And you know, witnessing that, it happened Easter morning, 1989, you know, and you know, coming home and hearing the fighting, the arguing, and then going, you know, hear my mother scream, going into the room, you know, pushing the door in, and my mother, you know, seeing blood, and what I seen, and then I had to take my little sister out of the crib and my brothers out of the house, not knowing if we were next, because that was in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't ever end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, families don't ever get out alive.
Yeah.
You know, it's rare that children...
You hear it a lot. I mean,
yeah,
hear it a lot in the news that it's a murder-suicide.
It's a whole family situation. But for me to be here today, it's a miracle. For my brothers and sisters not to be, when my mother was taken to the hospital, I mean, she died, you know, because of multiple stab wounds. And we lost a mother and a father that day. My mother was died and my father went to prison, and it wasn't over. There's the aftermath we're talking about. What does the child go through? The trauma. What is it? You know, it's not just the years of abuse that the child goes through, but now it's the aftermath. Growing up, adolescent years, what they have to go through because of all that emotional and all that things they had to see. And these kids, you know, they say, young men that grow up in the violent home, percentages really high. I mean, as far as like them becoming also the abuser in home, or a young woman that comes from a violent home and getting into a violent relationship, it's normal because that's what they've seen in their mother.
We have, we have the adolescent program at Behavior mm-hmm. Health, and a lot of the kids that we're seeing, especially the young men, and also in the young girls, is that they were victims of their mothers. They saw. They were
right,
exposed
yes.
to domestic violence. And now they have legal issues, drug
mm-hmm.
issues,
yeah.
a lot of, sometimes they ran away, school, they're failing school. So they have all these
right.
issues. And a lot of them is that they were exposed to trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never been...
No,
it's
really bad. I mean, that's why I do what I do. I mean, besides this, I mean, I speak. I'm a motivational mm-hmm. speaker. I go different places, wherever there's families, churches, different cities. I mean, that's what I've dedicated myself to do because of what I went through.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know what it can damage a person, how it can affect a child that has the opportunity, that should have the opportunity to grow up in a healthy manner. They should have that opportunity to be able to be healthy mentally, but because of the trauma in his early age or her early age, it's something that it takes away that opportunity sometimes,
mm-hmm.
that percentage that they're going to struggle in life. And so my message is going out there trying to help these young kids and help these families and help these families come together, unity, and help them understand or show them, hey, this is affecting your children. We need to like really do something about
mm-hmm.
this.
Well, and I would even bet that the people who we could say to them, hey, your children are being affected,
mm-hmm.
are also affected children themselves.
Well, sure, of course,
definitely.
It's a cycle of violence. We talked about that in our cycle of violence. There's the tension situation, coming home from work, bills, problems, marriage situations, and then there's the violence situation where it goes into the pushing.
Yeah, you're lucky
maybe
not to have
shoving.
A job, you know what I mean?
Right, maybe he might come home and just went, there's different things happen. And then it goes, the abuse happens, and then afterward he feels bad. I'm sorry, the honeymoon stage, let me go take you out to dinner. Like, it never happened. Like, he trying to just in denial. I've seen that my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I actually seen that whole thing
round
happen.
Round and round and round.
Until it ended in a tragedy.
Yeah.
And most times it ends in tragedy or ends in divorce or ends in, so it's, I mean.
Well, and all along the way it's causing harm.
Oh, sure
mm-hmm.
it is. Yeah, definitely it
to
is.
To the people involved,
everyone.
To their families,
right.
to people that, share the table at Thanksgiving, to
mm-hmm.
Schools and communities, because then that kid isn't learning because he's worried about
right.
What happens when he gets home, and now he's influencing the other kids in the room, and,
Well, they don't, and a lot of times, they don't have that ability or motivation no more to maybe get an education, or they feel like a lot of times their self-esteem is is hit, or their motivation, they're like, well, I don't feel like I could do anything. I grew up like that. I felt like I was never going to be nothing. I felt like I didn't have a chance in life. That's how I grew up. I was a very negative person.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care. I had a lot of anger inside me. I was bitter. I mean, these are a lot of the things that I went through as an adolescent person, even to my early adult years. I struggled until I had to have understanding and to learn. I had to, and that's kind of why I do this, because there's a lot of people that are in the same shoes that I am. They don't know how to get help. They're embarrassed, or they don't know what to do. There was not a lot of help back then. 89,
Got Center for Family Solutions
yeah.
trying
right.
to break the circle.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. It's top of the hour. This is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health. Join us for the second half of the show. We're going to talk about some strategies and techniques to get the buck to stop here.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUPO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And if you missed the first part of the show, you can always access it through the KXORadio.com podcast.
Or give it to the vecinos.
Yes. Yes. And it's been
the neighbors
really good.
Hey, we had a really cool show today.
Yes.
Send them the link with an email and just say, hey, check this out. Or post it on Facebook. Post your link on Facebook and say, wow, great show today. Loved it. It was, like, awesome. I'm Scott. She's Maria. This is Let's Talk About It. 337-8874 is the phone number. Give us a call. We're here today with Eric Apollinar, who is the Director of Counseling, and D'Angelo Singh, who is a program coordinator for the Centers for Family Solution, a 30-year-plus locally run and formed agency dedicated to managing violence in families in ways that lead to more peaceful, more robust, more nurturing ways of being in our community. And so hats totally off to them, because that's, you're up against it. I mean, there's a lot of energy that leans on us and makes it difficult maybe to be kind to each other on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis, including family histories, including society, including culture. And somehow, with all of that going on, we have to day-to-day, moment-to-moment, make the right decisions that help make this a better place to be in for everyone, including our kids, including whoever else that we might be in contact with. ¿Cómo la ves, Eric? Is that about more or less it?
You know, once we start thinking about people and the capacity they have to make their own choices, we start to have more respect for them. And I guess that's where we stand, and that's where we kind of, like, relate to these issues. We believe that regardless of the conditions and the situation, a person with the right kind of relationships in their life can overcome and can rehabilitate from any situation. So pretty much, even though it might be ingrained in our genetic code, like many people say, even though it might be our anthropological path, like
our
many
shadow
people
side,
say,
how's that?
Oh, well, our shadow side is always there, and we are the ones that relate to it, and we decide how we let it go. It's this little monster that we have in a cage, and we have to take him out during the night so he can eat, and he can take a pee, and he can take a poo. And then we bring it back to the cage. You know, our shadow side is always there, and we learn from it. It's not something that will overcome us. It will learn to relate to it. If it's something that we fear, if it's something that we try to keep, again, in that cage forever, then it will overcome us. It will become powerful. It will become strong. Obviously, we're talking about a Jungian approach to these issues, although anger and violence are not always the shadow side of human beings.
No, sometimes they're right in front and center, huh?
Yeah, so I do believe a lot of the things that are in the shadow today are tenderness, care, you know, appreciation of others, love. That becomes kind of like the shadow side for many males, specifically because of the masculinity issues that are out there. You know, how to be a man and how to become a man. So it's pretty hard to be tender. It's pretty hard to be vulnerable. It's pretty hard to be somebody weak. So I think those are the ones that are in our shadows.
Hang on, Mario's writing a song about it, because that sounded good. So, okay, so let's does somebody have to want to change? I mean, is it, if you're having, if you're sitting there, if it is an issue for you, whether you're sitting there thinking it's an issue or not, do you have to want to change to change? I mean, is that like the light bulb thing?
And that's the proverbial question in counseling, actually, right? How do you deal with clients that don't come because they want to?
Because they're forced to.
Because they're forced.
Well, we call them clients, first of all. It's a good place to start, huh?
Yeah, of course, we call them clients. We don't want to call them patients, right?
Or people, you know.
Or you know, human beings or whatever. The whole idea is that people will find between themselves this momentum to change as they start to learn about themselves. If somebody comes, let's say court order, to our program, mm-hmm. and they start to learn about themselves, they start to be self-analytic and they start to be self-observant, they will find that momentum to change, because we got to understand that nobody acts against themselves in detriment of their own self free willingly. You know, it's always because there's a lot of emotional, cognitive, traumatic issues in the way, and that's why they make the wrong decisions. If we help people deal with those issues, if we help people deal with the underlying factors to their behavior, they will make better choices. I'm not saying they will completely rehabilitate all the time, but they will start to think about themselves as
a
potential. They have a choice, and they have a potential. You know, they're this cocoon right now, and they can become a different animal. A butterfly, it sounds kind of weird, but
a moth.
A moth. Let's say a moth, and fly into the fire. No, reality is people have the potential inside of them to be different. You know, there's things in there that are lying dormant. Let's say, for example, somebody never tried poetry, you know, because it's not something that has been available to them. But one day they pick up a Pablo Neruda book because they want to get into some girl's pants. That's kind of macho. So they pick up a Pablo Neruda book, and they discover that poetry talks to them. There's such a beautiful language that is available to them, and that they have this inclination in their spirit to go through poetry. So it becomes part of something that they didn't know they had. That's what we call the potential. It's lying in there. It's dormant, and it can be available as we start to look into ourselves. Yeah, it's not macho, but I was gonna say rock and roll, but it would have sounded weird.
Well, yeah. that is the side of the other person that wants to change. But that's also for the victims. Not just the clients, but also the victims.
Obviously, the victims have a lot of rehabilitation to do. Mm-hmm. We have to deal with the aftermath of the trauma, and we also have to deal with some personality issues. We're talking about a lot of things that are present that make people choose the partners that they choose. So we have to also work with that. There's a lot of deficiencies in how we choose our partner, for example, in that case. There's a lot of underlying emotional issues. I might want to say that there's even mood disorders a lot of times associated, substance disorders. There's a lot of issues associated with violence, specifically because it impacts people in many different dimensions.
How do you... Okay, so people come in. What kind of stuff, what kind of activities, what kind of talks, what kind of process is involved in getting them to kind of look at themselves and jump into this?
Okay, in reality,
it's a project.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, you know. And let me try to kick my shoes out and take a little time to answer that. It's been over 30 years that we started dealing with this as a social problem, as a legal problem, and it's a little bit less as we have been trying to deal with it as a mental health problem.
Certainly, King's Nonviolence of the 60s may have been a time in which America, the United States anyway, started, you know, jumping into, hey, where do we need to be cool?
Yeah, it's groovy and peace to all. Yeah, definitely. There was a social movement all around the globe, you know, and the students in Paris, the students in Mexico. There was a lot of things going on.
And Gandhi in India.
It's
clearly.
It was an awakening, and that's why they call it the Age of Aquarius, right? So what I'm trying to say here is... We have very little knowledge of violence as an emotional problem, as a mental health problem. When we talk about other issues that have been further researched and that have been further dealt with, it's very recent as an object of study. But there's very successful approaches to it. Very successful approaches. Mm. What we do at the center, and I'm gonna use the scientific formula, we do this humanistic existential emotion center approach for them. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that we value the person as a person. Mm-hmm. We value their choices. We value their voice. And we center on their emotions, what's going on inside. Help them relate to those emotions, express them, and also learn to let them go. And also making meaning-making. There's a lot of grieving happening when we're dealing with trauma. We grieve what we used to be. We grieve what we could have been before the trauma. Mm-hmm. So the existential part goes with that. So we work a lot with that, and it's one of the best protocols out there that doesn't have to do with cognitive behavioral therapy, that doesn't have to do with attachment-based therapy. It's more humanistic, and that's kind of like where we stand as an agency, this more humanistic approach to our clients, our people. Mm-hmm.
What about the children? Do you provide any services to the children that have been exposed to the
domestic? That's such a beautiful question. We recently, and I want to thank them already, although they haven't done it, we recently have our children therapy room adopted by the Soroptimist Club in Imperial
Yay.
County. Thank you guys again and
yeah.
again.
I used to fundraise for the Seroptimists when I was in high school.
So we do have children therapy. We do. We actually believe it's one of the most important things that we do. So it's child-centered play therapy, and we also do a little bit of art therapy with them, sand tray therapy, those kind of things that have proven to be successful before in other types of trauma. Although related to domestic violence, there's not a lot of research, like I said, out there that tie this type of approaches to it. It has proven to be very effective with, let's say, people that survive earthquakes, that survive hurricanes. So we're using those approaches with them. And there's also the attachment based play therapy, where we have the mom and the kid work together in the mm-hmm. play therapy room and become well, better related to mm-hmm. each other through the use of ludic activities. So thank you for asking. Yeah, we're very concerned about dealing with our kids, and we have this big program and this big thing
now,
going on.
Now, those are kids. What about the hard one, the teenagers?
Okay.
That's, you know, that's sometimes,
even that
age group is hard of itself without having to deal with domestic violence or anything else. It's just...
Yeah, it's a hard phase. Some people never get over it. and I kind of glance, right?
I caught him.
That's
you. He's looking at you, not me.
I was looking at everybody in this room. No, in reality, you know, since it's so hard, that's why we have the Angelo thing for that. You know, I don't want to deal with them, so that's what we have the Angelo for. The Angelo, can you talk to them about that?
Yes.
So
yeah, the teenagers.
You're like the designated hitter for teenagers.
You know what? It's I love working with teenagers. I have my own teenage son, which I love very much. He's a very good kid. There's a lot of things that teenagers are up against today than what we were back in the times. I mean, there's a lot of things that they're dealing with, a lot of even easy access to things that probably shouldn't be getting into. But, you know, we're living a different age now, and these youth are up to against a lot of things. So they're up with stronger challenges. You know, we're talking about, you know, their motivation getting hit because they may come from something where, you know, they're struggling and their parents are struggling, so they don't see anything different. So then they kind of fall into that mood, and that's where they start to kind of say, well, you know, I'm just going to just hang out with my friends. And, you know, and there's different things that they're dealing with as far as at home as that, and then get to school, mm-hmm. and they got to deal with that
marginalized life in 4G.
Well, you know, they got better technology now, of course, you know, but
yeah,
they have more
drugs,
toys now.
The bullying.
And
yeah.
And
the
bullying
can
amplify
exactly.
the problems as well
yeah.
as the solutions.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you got texting, that yeah. you know, bullying texting. I mean, there's all kinds of things that on you know, on as far as, like, on Facebook. I mean, we hear stories. There's a lot of things. So trying to help them filter this out, trying to help them make better choices so that way they can, you know, be productive in the near future in their lives.
Facebook's a really good practice for choosing a domestic partner because you get an experience of, once you friend somebody, what you're opening
you're
up.
Learning.
Yeah, exactly. I would think.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I mean, and you know, and I've worked in gang programs, you know, as well, where I'm dealing with youth here. And I know a lot of kids here in the Valley, and a lot of kids know me. And, I mean, it's pretty much just being real with them. You know, they need to see somebody that's real. You know, somebody that, you know, that is genuine with them. That it's a lot of energy, but you have to be willing to want to work with them. But, yeah, definitely, I mean, it's a challenge sometimes, you know. But just getting that message across and helping them to understand what a healthy relationship is. There's also dating violence. A lot of kids don't understand that. I mean, I go to the schools and speak, and you see that, you know, and, you know, there'll be the girl that hit the boyfriend in the head, you know, and think it's well, you know, it's my boyfriend. You shouldn't be looking at that other girl over there. Or they think these are little cute things, but little do they know that it becomes something very serious later on in the future as they become adults, or they become living with somebody in a domestic relationship, and it becomes a serious mm-hmm. issue because they never dealt with it, or they think that's love.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I heard recently when a teenage boy saying his girlfriend was his property.
Yeah, I mean, I've even heard little kids start that
Whoa.
Young age, you know.
What?
And with tattoos now, we can actually trademark our stuff, right?
No,
yeah.
But yeah, that was just kind of like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, you know, and where did he learn that from? I mean, it's really crazy if you think about it. But, you know, TV, I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, that they see.
The music.
They learn. You know, yeah, the
they
music.
Listen to the
I mean,
music, they listen.
It's... it's really sad of the influence that a lot of these artists have, man, you know, but it's unfortunate. I mean, they do what they have to do to, what that's their life. But, you know, a lot of kids don't know that also these artists have their behind doors lives where they're struggling within themselves, and they came from violent homes. And we talk about, like, you know, like these other artists that, that was recently involved in domestic violence and mm-hmm. talks about his story, how he came from a violent home. And I mean, there's, you know, money that can cover that, but realistically, these kids don't really see what's really behind doors in the lives of these artists coming from gang violence and things like that.
Earlier on, D'Angelo, earlier on, either you or Eric, probably both, mentioned that artistic expression is a real... That was Eric. Okay.
Yeah.
Mentioned that, that it was a real possibility in terms of finding that creative channel for that anger and finding a way to express yourself in a way that that might open up some possibility
right.
for healing. And you mentioned that you'd written a poem. I wondered if we could take a
moment.
Yeah,
sure. You know, that's how I kind of got through a lot of myself, is a lot of writing, to learn how to write poetry. And I do music, too, and, you know, things like that. So, I can read this poem really quickly. It's called Miss Forever. It's about my mother. Victim Witness had asked about writing something about my mom, and so I wrote something, and I read it everywhere I go. This is called Miss Forever. It says, she represents strength, a woman of honor and virtue, always helping others. She was full of life. She was a daughter. She was a sister and a mother. She was beautiful and always smiling. She knew who she was even when disappointment surrounded her. She was full of love and understanding. Never judging others, but yet tough. She was full of hope and dreams, ready to make a change to show others that it's okay. With a strong mind to fight for what was right, always pushing through, even through her pain and strife. My mother, she cried, she screamed, and she was struck with a fist over and over again. She bled, walking around with a crushed spirit, trying to hold her head up. She kept going, standing with pride to be a woman. She had to hide, fighting for her children, fighting for her life. Holding on to God with all she had there, she found peace in her darkest hours. And if you looked in her eyes, my mother's eyes, you would see assurance of living for something. She lived for others. On March 26, 1989, her life was cut short by the hand of my father. The man who promised to protect her took her away, away from those that loved her, away from six children, away from me. I was only 14. My mother, she fought to her last breath. I know she did, and there was nothing that could hold her back when she lived, not even death. And she is my mother, and I'll always miss her, but I admire her, and she is my hero. And even though she's not here today, she speaks to her grave. Can you hear her? Listen. She says, let go of your hate. Let go of your pain. Stop family violence. Please, please, I plead with you. Look at your children. See their pain. And see them suffer. I did, but it was too late. And this is pretty much the story of who my mother was when she lived. She struggled with domestic violence, but yet she was trying to help other women get out of their situations. She was also being part of Center for Family Solution at that time, struggling with restraining orders, but, you know, getting off welfare with six children and going back to IVC. These were the changes that she was making in the end. And although this happened, I believe that it happened for a big purpose. A purpose that today, even though she's not here, she's still reaching people. She's still reaching lives. And that's why I dedicate myself to be that voice for her, to help people. So I don't believe this was done in vain, although I grew up most of my life believing that, because I was hurt mm-hmm. and I was disappointed. But the bigger picture, no, it's a great cause that her life was taken, but although it's for a purpose today.
If people want to hook up with Center for Family Solutions, if they were touched by what they heard or what they thought about today, where do they go? Who do they call?
Well, you know, they can call Center for Family Solutions. Our number is 760-353-6922. You know, you call there. There's no extension. You can get there. There's people ready to hear what you need to say, what you need. We have different programs there. I also, again, the number is 760-353-6922. I want to talk really quickly. This is a very important thing. This is our march that we have, our walk, domestic violence walk. Trying to get involved the community, trying to get involved everybody in the community. This is a one-time thing that happens every year, but I believe if we all come together, it's for a good purpose. Trying to get, you know, kids involved because so they can see that this is a good cause also, that it can be turned around. So the Awareness Walk 2011 is to, you know, come join us for an annual walk against domestic violence. We meet at the steps, Superior Court, 939 Main Street. We meet there, and then we walk through the whole Main Street, all the way down to the park, the middle part where the, you know, the
water park.
Yes,
the little Main Street.
Town Square Park. Yeah, we meet there for a vigil, and we have like, you know, we have like the, we talk about the survivors, the domestic violence victims, and we have resource tables. We have food there. I mean, this year we're really trying to really just make it happen with as many as people we can to support this. So please, I encourage you, October 20th on a Thursday from 5:15 to 7 p.m. Come out with your family. Bring your family. Bring your children. Bring your relatives. You know, this is the time to bring all your relatives. You know, so bring everybody with you and support this. So again, it's on October 20th. Of at 5:15 to 7 p.m. So again, this is the Awareness Walk.
And if they say they heard about it on Let's Talk About It, and they're one of the first 150 people,
right,
you give them a free T-shirt.
Oh
right?
Yeah, we give them free T-shirts, and we're gonna have really cool T-shirts. So I think these shirts are really gonna be something that they're gonna like. So yeah, the free T-shirts, the first 150 participants. So come out and have a good time. Have a great time and be part of this march. Can you imagine the whole Main Street full of just
candles,
people? And I mean, it would be an amazing thing. So,
have you guys expanded out into social media yet? Is there a Facebook Center for Family Solutions Like It page?
Yeah, we do have a Facebook Center for Family Solutions. I believe www.facebook.com/ Womanhaven.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we have the Facebook and so yeah, definitely. We have a website too. I forgot about the website, but definitely you can call the number.
Google
Hello. Center for Family Solutions.
Yeah, I had it right here, but you know, but yeah, definitely. I mean, there's, you know, the number again, 353-6922. You know, call in, and but there's, you know, we're here to help and serve the community.
Well, thank you, D'Angelo, and
thank you for having us,
Eric, for coming on board and for everything you guys do for making this a more peaceful planet, man.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you. I just had a quick announcement. This actually just came in through the wire. IVC is having a student health fair today, and it starts at 9:30, and it runs to 1:30 p.m. So if you're an IVC student, you get free health screenings. They can check your eyes, your weight, some blood work, so you can stop by. They got free hot dogs. So if you're an IVC, if you want to get the service, it's there today from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And again, if you said you heard it on Let's Talk About It, they'll give you all that free health screening stuff.
There you go.
All right, I'm Scott. She's Maria. That was Mario Espinoza, our executive producer. And we are Let's Talk About It, brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, and have a good weekend.
And join us again next week.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.